Please take your seats. This evening's performance is about to begin.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Knife Life Podcast. We're glad that you could join us for another conversation just about knives and the lives we lead around them. My name is Eugene Kwan. You can find me on Instagram and YouTube under that name.
My name is Frank, a.k.a. Dr. Frunky. You can find me on YouTube, where I have a channel, and Instagram. You can also email me at drfrunky@gmail.com.
Hello, this is Mike. I go by Bloom and Blade on Instagram.
And this is Charlie. I go by Accidentally Knives.
So, in addition to the regular guys who are on this podcast every episode, we actually have a special guest. He's everybody's favorite jackass. And I'm not exactly sure as a pastor if I'm allowed to say that, but I just did. But yeah, you want to go ahead and introduce yourself?
Hey, everybody. Time? Nick here.
No, it's Nick Shabazz. That's awesome.
Oh, Nick Shabazz. I'm sorry. Yeah, Nick Shabazz.
Wow. Okay, yeah. So we've got Nick Shabazz on the episode today. And yeah, it's just going to be a great time. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about. And the kind of general overarching question that we wanted to start off with was, you know, what, generally speaking, in the knife hobby brings us joy, but more specifically even, maybe what are some recent acquisitions, recent additions to our collections that we can kind of update our listeners on that have brought us joy and that we foresee will continue to do so. So, yeah, who wants to start for us? Anyone have anything new that has given you a little bit of joy?
Well, I mean, I'd be happy to start and just talk about a couple of Koenig knives that I got recently.
Please talk about those. Yeah.
I'm pretty public with the knives that I get and the joy that they bring me. But these two knives definitely have been a really nice project with Bill. I've gotten to know him over the last year, and it adds so much more meaning to these acquisitions. But the knives themselves are fantastic. They're kind of copper, carbon fiber, matching set. The Arius is a non-flipper. The Mini Goblin is a copper and bronze, beautiful thing, and just really happy to have him. And I really like Bill's knives. I think he makes a really good product. I think his family-oriented sort of business style is great. And it's been interesting because I found that the Koenig Knives brand does not actually bring everyone joy like it does for
me. Are you serious?
Yeah. There was someone in particular that feels very strongly that the Koenig brand is not for him because of the way that, you know, he split off from Millet Knives early on. But I don't want to get into all that. But,
sure.
You know, I really want to say that those knives are perfect, and I totally love them. Definitely bring me a lot of joy right now. Check out pictures of those on Instagram for sure.
They're bringing me joy, Doc, and I've never even handled them. Holy crap, did he do good work.
Nick, yes. I have a plan for a care package for you coming up sometime in the near future. We're gonna work this out.
If this doesn't go down in 4 hours, I'll contact my doctor.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, so let's make sure that we're all relaxed and to mess. I'm sorry. So let's
too messy.
Okay, so
he's the doctor now. Wow, that's a good word right there.
Good word.
Koenig knives will definitely bring me a lot of joy as well. And it's kind of funny because I just recently rediscovered that because it'd been a little while since I carried my Arius. And you know, sometimes as a reviewer, which, you know, maybe we can get into a little bit later in this episode, but you know, every now and then when I kind of get backed up with reviews, I kind of forget the knives that I fell in love with initially, you know? And so I finally found myself able to throw my Arius back in my pocket recently, and man, just fell in love with that knife all over again. So yeah, Frank, actually you kind of took my answer. The Arius just really brings me so much joy, even though it's not a recent acquisition for me.
It's fun to do that sometimes, to kind of come full circle with a knife where you put it down for a while, try some other things, and then you're like, oh yeah, this is really good.
Yeah,
that's cool.
I think I had something like that, but it was for like 3 years. I didn't touch any high-end bench mates, right? So I keep talking about my 940, which is the latest knife that I've gotten that kind of totally changed the game for me. I think if you have the patience to go into not just one store, but multiple stores and in different states and countries.
Multiple stores.
If you can get one, I think that is just perfect in every way. I think it's really hard to beat, you know.
Hold on, Charlie, because you kind of glossed over that go into mm-hmm. multiple stores thing, and yeah. I think our listeners need to know exactly how many 940s you bought in order to get the one that you decided to keep.
Between 9 and 11.
Wow.
So, it's a very nice knife, right? It's got the axis lock, which I guess you guys can call it the spindle lock, I believe.
Oh, it's the axis lock. It is the axis lock, guys. Danger zone.
Here we go.
It's a nice locking mechanism, I've heard. But yeah, apart from that, I do also like my Shirogorov Neon, the Mark II. That's the one with the Zerk spacer that is also very hard to acquire. I think there's something like 30 or 50 of them, I believe. 50. 50 is the new custom division runs. So that is a piece that's, I don't know, it's pretty special. It's growing on me a lot. I didn't like it initially when I got it, but it's just a hair bigger than the old Neon. I don't know. It's pretty perfect in every way, I think.
So other than the you just saying that it was a hair bigger, are there any other differences between the Mark II and the previous Neons?
I mean, it's hard to do a head-to-head comparison since it's a custom division knife compared to what people associate with the Neons, which are the Neon Lights.
Yeah.
But it is, you know, it's fully contoured. It's it's internally milled, and not just like the aesthetic milling, but like lightened. It's got the Zerk backspacer that kind of extends out to accommodate the longer blade. It's got the pivot collars, it's got the handle milling, it's technically Damasteel. I don't know why I said technically, it is Damasteel.
Is
it technically a knife? Just checking.
I don't think so. I don't believe it does that.
Well, I don't believe it's ever cut anything, right, in your case?
Well, in that case, technically, I don't own knives.
I'm going to keep it that way. Yeah, but it's actually just going back to Russia. I already handed it to Sergey at the California show.
Oh,
so,
why is that?
For what?
You know, it's not every knife is perfect. You know what I mean? Even if you pay $2,000 for a knife, you can't expect it to not have problems.
That is incorrect.
But yeah, it seems like it's how it goes. I think it's to be expected. Unfortunately, that's been my experience. Is, you know, with higher prices, you don't necessarily get perfection. So it's always weird when people say, "Oh, I can't believe you spent $200. How can you expect fit and finish like that?" I'm like, "Well, I don't know. In my eyes, it's pretty obvious. Maybe I'm very laxed with giving makers a chance to make things right, but it's been my experience that I've had to send back roughly half of what I've ever owned multiple times sometimes." So
think twice if the maker is in the room making you say these things.
Well, it's a nice thing to say I think it's all about managing your own expectations. Mm-hmm. And at this point, it's so low
that I'm
just fine with everything.
Man, I really that's too. I can't accept like imperfect, like some imperfections are not excusable at all.
Sure.
Well, I'm also a lot more picky than most, too. So the fact that he would accommodate my requests.
You probably send your steak back twice.
I've done that, yes. Yeah. Even out of PJs, I don't care.
There you go.
Hey,
okay.
Steak is a very sensitive issue.
Yeah. I mean, I've sent a steak back once or twice in my life, but, you know, it's a thing.
See, guys, I'm the model minority. I just eat what's put in front of me. And I don't complain. I tip 20% at the end. It doesn't matter. I just go home.
And you pray before you eat it.
I do.
You're a good guy, Eugene. You're a good guy.
My goodness, yeah.
So Nick, what about you? Nick, you got anything recently that is in the pocket that brought you some joy?
So in the pocket, I mean, yeah, there are some really nice things coming. The actually the Mass Drop Laconico Keen.
Oh yeah, that looked great.
It not only is it very attractive, but it just freaking cuts. It's beautifully ground, and it's just it's pocket pecking like crazy. That's already the thing I know I'm not gonna love. That thing's hung like a horse, but at the same time, holy crap, is it nice? So that's nice. Good. And then I actually the Holtz, Joe and Angie Holt, Holt Blade Works, those folks. I've been working with them for probably like 2 months to get a really nice knife made for a buddy of mine. And that came through this week, and he's Sid137 on Instagram. You can check it out there. Mm-hmm. But they knocked it out of the park. Like, this was a knife with beautiful carbon fiber inlays, and it was just like, it was restorative to my soul. Because I handled it for like 20 minutes, but it was just like, I can't complain about this knife. And that's so that's weird great. To me. And,
yeah,
and
especially
it looked
since,
really nice. It
yeah. yeah.
And they did, they're so nice. That's the other thing is like, I like the Holtz so damn much as humans, partly because they make incredible knives. But so that was, that brought me a lot of joy. Not only that it brought him some joy, but just seeing them knock that so far out of the park. Mm-hmm. It was just like, yes, yes, yes.
I think he did a good job of appreciating it, of showing them that he appreciated it.
Yeah, I think he's definitely over the moon. So yeah, that brought me, that brought me a lot of joy. And in the pocket, I've got the Spyderco McBee. That little tiny thing.
Yeah, yeah. Like tiny one. Inch and a half blade or something.
Yeah, yeah. It's hilariously small, but I carried it for the first time today and I kinda like it.
Oh,
like I
how did I know
it.
You were gonna say that? The tiniest knife possible.
Little bit chance,
like
I get it.
It,
but still.
Yeah, yeah.
On.
Let's clarify that 1.5 inches in Nick's hands is probably about a 3-inch blade in everyone else's.
Oh,
so that's
this is a Nick Shabazz Spada XL right here.
But that's interesting. That who designed that knife?
Isn't it McNee that designed it?
McNee's?
Yeah, McNee's.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
pretty
close to the custom. Like, the custom is actually, almost got the exact same footprint, profile, everything, right?
Yeah. And it's beautifully made.
Speaking of Spyderco's in your pocket, I saw you were carrying the Brower a lot recently.
God.
Trying to figure that out. What does that mean, you're trying to figure it out?
I honestly, look, very often I will, and this gets to the reviewing thing we might talk about, but very often I take something out of the box and it's just like moment one, like, okay, this is pretty solid. Or moment one, oh God, I hate this. Or moment one, oh, this is really nice. This may be a gem. With this knife, like my first handle was, this is great. And then subsequently was like, well, this isn't that good. And then it keeps going back and forth. I'm vacillating. It's just like, if you sat me down and forced me to make this review tomorrow, it'd just be like, I have no freaking clue how I feel about this knife. And it's weird. And so I got freaking nothing and I'm trying to figure it out. And I think I'm getting closer. But it's just it's so good and so flawed in at the same time. Yeah. I think it's a very good knife. There's no doubt about that. But the question is how I feel about it. Yeah. Is that enough? I don't know.
Nick, it's interesting you say that because I like for our listeners who didn't know, I also manage a knife department at a local mom and pops.
Yeah,
we've had one of those Browers in for maybe a couple months at this point. I see it every day. I pick it up. I look at it, and I feel the same way. I'm very ambivalent towards it. There's some things I love about it, but there's some things I don't. And I was planning on picking one of them up from our store to do a review on it. But, it didn't give me that initial spark that was just like, okay, there's potential to this to really, really excite me, you know? And it certainly didn't bring me immediate joy, actually, picking that up. And so that was kind of surprised because I thought I was going to really like that knife model. But it's left me feeling kind of ambivalent a little.
Well, I loved it when I first handled it. I actually handled the prototype way back when at Spyderco's factory. And that was like, whoa. But again, now that I'm spending more time with it, it's just like, oh, my God, I don't know. I am confused. It's like how I felt with the tie lock. I just don't know.
Sure.
Yeah, I don't know. But that's
you still have your tie lock, right?
Oh, yeah. It was in the pocket yesterday, actually. Speaking of just rediscovering an old knife that's been around, that brought me some joy. That's a damn good knife.
I remember that was kind of the first knife I've ever asked you about back when you were a nobody.
Now I'm just a slightly more prominent nobody.
a nobody with 50,000 people behind him is basically
what yeah, a nobody being followed.
Back when he was Sulfur 1488, whatever your name was on there.
Indeed. Wow.
Back when his accent was a little bit different.
You know? I have no idea what you're talking about.
That's a different guy.
Yeah, that's true. That was the imposter.
Stewie back then. A lot more Stewie. All right.
Hey, Mike. So what about you, Mike? What brings you joy?
Well, that I got recently. Actually, I scored back to back. I got two. I got and neither of them were planned, but I got a Richard Rodgers Slim Utility.
Yeah, that looks cool.
And yeah, that I have on me almost all the time. Gross.
It's called a slut, though.
It's fantastic. And like Frank said in the beginning, it really brings me back to like when I first got into this, I really liked tiny knives. Under 2.75 inch blades. This one's about 2.75, liner lock, super slim, 1.5 ounce, no clip. And living in New York, it's great because I can put it in my change pocket in my jeans, the fifth pocket. Super discreet, don't have to worry about anything. And it's just a perfect knife. I always have it on me. And for me, for normal use, it's fantastic. And then right after that, I got the Mini Goblin, which, you know, I had seen, obviously everybody's posting them nonstop, and also it's a pretty compact size, really great looking, really clean, really nicely made, great action. I mean, there's not anything really negative to say about that knife. You know, I think it looks great too.
It's growing on me. I got it from Bill, honestly, is sort of more of like a let me support you in your business kind of a thing, but and I wasn't sure I was gonna like it, but it's really growing on me. And
I really like the size too. That's another fifth pocket knife. It's really great for everything, anything I ever have to do with a knife. And just, I think it's dead sexy looking.
It's great on two of three dimensions, though. That's my problem with it.
You think it's a little wide for it?
It's a bit thick.
I wish it were.
If I do a skinny model, I want two of them.
And you know what, Nick? I completely agree. If I could change this knife in one way, everything could be thinner, the stock could be thinner, and the tolerances could be a little bit tighter. And if it were, you know, 75% of this thickness, it would be fantastic. But even as is, I think I really like it quite a bit. And I like small flipper tabs. And this one is a small flipper tab that works really well, predictably.
You know, I talked to Bill Koenig about the thickness of the knife itself, and he was saying that, and I think this makes sense even if it's not necessarily to our preference, but he was saying that keeping the thickness roughly the same as the thickness of the Arius was intended to give it kind of a family genetic resemblance, if that makes sense. You know, yes, it's a different designer, but he wanted it to feel like a smaller Arius in terms of length, but not in terms of how it fit in the hand. And so I thought that was an interesting take, but you know, once you decide to go small in a couple dimensions, you got to go small in all of them.
You have to go thinner as well. I could see maybe if he said, you know, well, if I intended it for heavy use and I wanted to fill out your hand. Okay. Sure. For me, that was my only critique of it, really strong critique, is that I wish it were about a good bit thinner,
but I do respect I respect that he's got a reason for it. I mean, I'm willing to take a bunch of crap basically from a maker if they're like, no, this is genuinely how I believe this knife should be made artistically and aesthetically. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, you know what? Sure, that's fine.
Fair enough.
It's when they're not in, when he just never thought about it, like, oh, of course it's going to be 0.15 or whatever it is. That's where it gets to me. So if he's thought it through, then, you know, I can disagree with him and, you know, still be wrong, but you know, at least it's something.
It just becomes a difference of vision, right?
Yeah, exactly.
We can totally have room for that in the hobby. There's plenty of space.
I will say, of the two that I just got, this Rogers I know will stay in my collection. I know I'll have this in my pocket all the time. It's just too good not to have in your pocket, especially if you're in New York and can't just carry very much.
You know, one knife that actually kind of took me by surprise by how much I enjoyed it, although, you know, I actually just mailed it off today to someone who bought it from me. But it was actually the SOG knives. And yes, you heard me right. SOG, S-O-G knives. the Terminus XR. I just uploaded a review of it not too long ago. But that knife actually really surprised me because I had all but written off SOG like years ago. I pretty much had just become completely disinterested in their stuff. I was turned off by how much branding they do on their knives. Generally speaking, none of them are ergonomically suitable for a non-gloved, bare-skinned hand. And so I just really was turned off by them as a company. But when I saw the slip joint come out a couple of years back, that just the regular Terminus, that kind of got me interested. But then with the Terminus XR, I decided to buy one. And man, that was a really impressive knife. I mean, it still is. Obviously, it's a new release, but it gets the, you know, their version of the Axis Lock. They get it down just right. It's riding on bearings. It's got BDZ1 steel, which is, you know, decent for the price. But the overall size and shape, it was like $70, like $69.99, or maybe $79.99, around that ballpark. Certainly, well under $100. It's a perfect EDC size. I mean, I can't stop singing its praises because I was just so blown away by it. And so, I don't know, I guess especially since I have been getting a little bit more into the more expensive end of the spectrum as of the last few months especially, it was nice to be surprised by a low-cost knife that just did everything better than I expected it to. Even the branding, they toned it down, so it's just a ridiculous pocket clip and a little bit of a laser etching on the blade. So I was kind of impressed by that. I don't know if you guys were ever planning on checking it out, but I think it's a worthwhile alternative to the spindle. I mean, the Axis Lock.
let's talk about this. Here's something that can bring some people joy. The Axis Lock is commercially available. It's the bat is up.
It's become democratized.
So now we're going to see people make Benchmades better than Benchmade.
Yes.
Like Hoag and Sog are trying to do right now.
Right. I've got the Hoag made Ritter knife, the Mark II, I think it is. Yeah.
That is literally a Griptilian made by Hoag. It's very strange.
Right. Yeah, yeah. It's on its way. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that. I'll let you guys know what I think, but yeah.
I've got the Millet Perpetua. It's Mass Drop plus Millet plus TJ Schwartz.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, after I kind of, lubricated and everything, Exxon Shabazz over here, it's absolutely excellent. I mean, there's a lot to like about it. I haven't, carried it enough to say, but it's neat to see the Axis Lock getting a little bit more love around, because I think it'll be interesting and it may put some pressure on Benchmade, frankly.
Sure. Yeah.
Which I think would be great, because I'm thrilled about this SOG. I want these companies to succeed. I want them to do incredible work. And I think Benchmade does. I think, and it, here in SOG, like, great. Let's hear it.
Yeah. Yeah. But speaking of lube and things that bring people joy. Well, okay.
Where are you going with this?
What?
It's totally tidy. What do you guys think about the knife pivot lube? I haven't tried it myself, but have you guys gotten a chance with it? Because a lot of people are very excited about that stuff.
It's hype, right? It's 15 weight oil, right? It's like,
that's pretty much all it is, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, right? It smells weird. Like, good, not badly, but
it smells good.
So, full disclosure, they sent me a couple of bottles to try out, and my basic feeling about it is that it's absolutely fine. It's slightly better than the 10-weight nano oil on washer knives, that is, for phosphor bronze. Mm-hmm. I do like it better there. But otherwise, it's just as good as nano oil, but cheaper. And I mean, by the ounce or whatever it is, it's cheaper. And so at that level, I like it a lot, but it's not, I'm also not like, oh my God, it's the next coming, any of that kind of thing. It's fine.
The container is better too. I mean, like, I think the applicator works a little better and the cap doesn't come off. I like the cap design.
Sure.
I've used it on a couple washer knives. Charlie, that's what I put on the Richard Rogers when I,
The problem I have is that I
think it's great.
I spent $13 or whatever 6 years ago and bought a tube of 10-weight nano oil.
Yes.
And I've used like a third of it in that amount of time, right? And I've disassembled like hundreds of knives. It just doesn't – so I have no reason to buy a new one. So
if they
want to send me one, I'll try it out. But I don't have any reason to buy one right now or the foreseeable decade. I just don't know.
Opinion. I just don't see – I mean, I don't go through lube that fast, I guess. but I would be impressed if in a blind test you could tell the difference. between maybe 10 different lubricants. I would be very, very impressed if you can give me a blind test that one performs better, so to speak.
On bearings, no money. I'm not going there. But on washers, I really do think there's a slight improvement over the 10 weight. Sure. And maybe it's just the slightly thicker oil that makes it a little nicer. But no, but I agree. On bearings, it's just like at some level, who the hell cares? Yeah. I mean,
but you said it smells different?
Yeah. They put it in. That's an additive too, Nick.
Okay.
Like because it's on their FAQ on their site, because I was like, this is so aromatic. As soon as you open it, really what is aromatic.
It, what's the smell? What is it?
Yeah, what kind of bouquet are we talking about? Hold on, is there any touch of chocolate or
it's like talking botanical bergamot or something?
It's more botanical. Hold on, let me get mine.
Interesting.
Smells like Bigfoot's dick.
Doc, I'm sorry to say, I don't quite know that smell as well. Maybe you could describe it for us.
I know it really
that
well.
That's the first thing that comes to mind when you hear botanical, right?
Yeah. I just what think 40% of the time it works every time.
Classic Frank.
Yeah, I'm just messing around.
Get out of the swamp more.
But Nick, that is on their on the FAQ on their site that they did intentionally add that scent.
But why?
I think people complain about the nano oil.
Set it apart.
Nano oil doesn't smell, to my knowledge. The grease smells like hell. But
who smells their knives?
Smell my knives.
I guarantee you, people smell their knives.
Yeah, 1,000. Charlie, you don't smell it. When you put a drop on, you don't smell it, but while you're applying it and a couple drops are coming out accidentally, you just smell it a little bit. Nick, you noticed it right away, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
No. I'm just saying, who has complained about the smell of nano oil and stuff like that, where it's being like an issue?
We'll see. In a lot of Nick's reviews in the beginning, he's like, "Oh, the smell is, it's not really
though,
a gem."
Not the nano oil. The oil to me is fine. But the nice thing is I can just dab a little of this behind my ears before date night. And, that way I don't need to hit the bathroom on the way out,
You can also use it as lube, right?
So you can have knife pivot lube and some baby wipes and you're good.
Exactly,
I think this is a good idea for a secondary channel, Nick. I think you need to expand to lube tasting and just checking out the aromas.
I've had a disturbing number of people ask me if Astroglide is a safe knife lube.
Oh, goodness sake.
And it's
are you
just
serious?
Like, yeah. And I think some of them are earnest about it. Like, that may be the lube they have in their house.
Well,
it's
Amazon Prime was selling a 55-gallon drum of that stuff last Prime Day. So maybe they cashed in, and maybe they just needed, what else do they use this for?
You only know about that because of your Amazon history, so.
All
right, this is the wrong topic, guys.
This is the right topic.
Entirely.
Yeah, this is the perfect topic.
Okay, there's one other knife I wanted to bring up that brings me joy, and technically it's not out yet, but it kind of is. So I think you'll know what I'm talking about once I mention it, but today I was carrying my J-Cape 2.0 by Something Obscene Company. It's this... Yeah. Just wicked looking clip point with a lightning bolt for a pocket clip. It's impractical in a lot of ways. There's jimping all over it. But I don't know. When I look at a knife like this, and when I think about Felix and the kind of guy he is too, kind of like what you were mentioning with the holds, Nick. I don't know. It just really brings me a lot of joy. I just really enjoy this knife, and I'm really looking forward to the 3.0. So. In the 3.0, it's going to be both a flipper, as well as they're going to be a thumb stud variant, but he's reducing the amount of jimping, all over the knife. And, I think giving a less problematic pocket clip option for those who don't really like the lightning bolt. So I'm really looking forward to that. And so I was thinking maybe we could also pivot in that direction. Is there anything on the horizon for you guys that you're looking forward to that you don't have yet that you anticipate will give you a lot of joy?
Oh man, that's a dangerous question to ask me.
Oh, Frank, you got a good one coming, Frank.
Yeah. I just sent a couple of pictures to you guys on the group chat before this. Maybe my next project that's coming through the pipeline might be an Andre Thorburn. That I'm excited about because, and this actually ties into my, to the Holtz, actually. It's interesting that you guys mentioned that, but while I was at Blade, I was at the Chad Nichols table and I bought some Mokume, and I was standing next to Joe and Angie there, and I actually met them in person, and we chatted, and they bought a block of Mokume, and so that may be turning into a specter at one point sometime in the future. That's going to bring me some joy, I think. Ooh, but
yes.
While I was there, I picked up a block of the copper, bronze, and zerk Mokume that they had just come out with there at Blade, and I gave it to Andre, and I was like, take this to South Africa and make me a knife out of it, please, sir. And he just posted on his Instagram a picture of the bolsters, like he was working on it. So he hasn't said anything to me. His wife has emailed me a couple of times, like, just to confirm the specs. And thanks to Charlie, I did ask for that blade change as well to some Damacore. So it's going to be something absolutely out of this world. So
wow, that's pretty wild, man.
That material is really nice, Frank. I got some of that for two knives by JD at the same time as you did his blade.
Well, there you go.
And,
yeah.
Man, that stuff is real nice.
And I have recently acquired that JG Custom Scout that has the Damacore blade, which is something that I need to send to Nick. Nick, I had Nathan send it back to me.
That's
I have a plan for you, though. It's going to happen. It's going to happen.
Oh, man, that's beautiful.
Good. Yeah. But yeah.
Those scouts are incredible.
Hold on one second. Before the scout,
yeah.
I'm just curious. Frank, what model did you get?
L36M. L36M.
Okay.
That was the one, you know, I was introduced to Thorburns by Tyler, Tavarish Works.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And,
you should ask him for one without the recurve.
I honestly thought about asking it, but I just, you know, I didn't think he would do it. I did kind of.
He'll do anything you ask
him. He'll do it.
He's so nice. He's too nice. Him and Angie, they're too nice.
He's so nice, man. He was so nice to me. I was just some schmo, and he's like, "Sure, I'll take your Mokume and make you a knife." I was like, "Really? You're like, you're like the best knife maker ever. Like, what are you doing?" Okay.
Well, this
he's a very nice guy.
Yeah, it connects back to one of the things that Nick, you recently put a video on this, another source of joy, like when makers are actually positive to deal with and take criticism well, but also take feedback, you know, on other projects nicely. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. That must have been a pretty fun video to do for you.
It is. Absolutely. It brings me, and there are so many people who are just like really good people in the community where you can feel the passion that they have for it. You know, there are people where I occasionally feel like, okay, you may just be doing this to make some money. and they don't tend to lack, you know, I get that. There's something to be said. But there are the people, though, where it's like you genuinely get the feeling that you hand them the Mokume with the Zerk in there and they're like, oh, I want to make a knife out of this. Like with him. And I don't know that I've met Thorburn. Actually, I have, but just briefly. But no, where it's just like the challenge itself is interesting to them. And like improving their knives and constantly like they want to do great. And those folks just they're so good and they tend to be making the good stuff anyways.
Yeah.
So it's just like that. And so talking about those people directly and giving the shout outs was just a source of joy because it's just like these people need more love and they'll take it. They'll do good things with it. So, yeah,
man. Frank, I mean, that's pretty exciting, the stuff that you got coming and from great people, but really awesome materials as well. Yeah, what about you other guys? Anything that you guys are looking forward to that's kind of got your appetite going?
I'm in a pretty similar boat with Frank, as in, you know, I've got a few Thorburns coming. I've got a Spectre coming. I think for both, I have no idea what's going on with it. I think it's maybe it'll happen when it happens. I like to not get my hopes up for these things. So I think it'll just be a surprise, hopefully a good surprise. And I think, like a lot of people, hoping for a build from Gareth Bull. We'll see whether or not it happens.
Yeah, I'm in that boat too.
Yeah, I think we all are in the same ship.
I mean,
except for Frank. Frank's in a different ship. He's trying to get on that ship. You know,
he was on the express ship. I think that ship actually sprouted wings and flew over all the other ships. Somehow.
I had nothing to do with it.
But I'm not going to complain about it.
Yeah.
I think the Wii Pleroma. I've been waiting for that knife ever since it dropped.
Yes.
Interesting.
That's the one. That's my next production knife for sure, is that Pleroma.
Maybe that's going to be a contender for Knife of the Year, best production knife of the year for sure.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
You guys think so? I feel like it's a pretty polarizing design.
Oh, it is, but that doesn't make it bad.
It doesn't, it's saying a Ferrari is a polarizing design. You know, it's like it's built kind of on another level than a lot
Who
of other
knives.
Who says
that? Who has said a Ferrari?
Okay.
Oh, the Enzo.
Sure. Yeah, the Enzo. I was going to say, Nick, the Enzo was super polarizing. Cleaner.
That was 17 years ago.
Say Lamborghini, whatever you want to say. You know what I'm saying. Just
actually, Picasso. Not everybody loved the LaFerrari.
Picasso is weird, but it's art. You know what I mean? It's. Just,
I think a Bugatti is pretty ugly. A very ugly.
Okay, fair enough. It's a Beetle with
not
a
own stock in the ass companies.
Well, I mean, not to add fuel to this fire here, but I actually really don't like the Pleroma.
There you go.
There you go.
But not because it's a bad knife at all. I mean, when I handled it at Blade Show, you know, phenomenal action, excellent build quality. And it's funny because Elijah was just at the, you know, he was right there when I picked it up. So we were kind of talking about it together. And he was like, well, you know, I mean, at this point in the game, any design I come out with has to have a hole in the blade, right? You know? So I was like, yeah, sure. There you go.
Well, but, it's not true, though. He made the Omen. That didn't have a hole in the blade.
I think that might have been from a... Well, only wasn't that one more of a collaboration where he was doing more of the CAD work for that knife?
He did. He pretty much did the whole thing.
Oh, okay. I see.
Kind of sort of. I don't really know the specifics, but I think he did most of the real designing on it.
Sure. Yeah. What about you, Mike? What are you looking forward to? What's on your joy horizon?
Well, I'm hoping I have an unknown joy coming up, and hope I find something at New York Custom Knife Show, which is coming up in a couple weeks. I think after getting this the Slim Utility by Rogers, the Rogers lottery has sort of become my number one reason to go there. Mm-hmm. I have to finish a couple designs with JD, and really, I really want to pick up a Cultro Tech.
Oh my goodness! Yeah,
They just look better and better. I know
they showed
one
today,
show.
And it looked out of this world.
Oh, it looked great. Talking to a couple people on Instagram who have them. I've seen them at shows before, so I really look forward to picking one of those up. And then I have a couple builds. I think I mentioned it maybe in the last episode, like another build by JG, a Rover coming up. And I finally figured out a Thorburn build.
Wow.
That I'm really excited to sort out with him.
Yeah, you have a
couple
of ships
customs
on the horizon.
No productions are on the horizon, really.
Sure.
For now, I'm still getting my feet back into production stuff, but I'm still a little bit out of touch. But I do love picking up productions more and more. They're great.
Yeah. What about you, Nick? What are you looking forward to?
So on the production front, I'm actually really looking forward to the Spyderco Paizan.
Okay, sure.
I handled the proto for that, and it was just like they took everything that they needed to learn from the Nirvana production, and they learned it. And so it really, the one I handled was phenomenal. And so I think that's going to be a great knife. I have a Lamic Busker to replace my old one that's on the way. I've kind of told Lamic, just, you know, take your time with it. This, you know, other people should get their knives first. I'm low on the list. And I've got them kind of doing a little bit of an outrun sort of build, that kind of quality. And then I'm working with the Holtz on one for me that I'm hoping is going to be pretty spectacular. Those are exciting me.
They made an amazing knife for a guy, you know, I can only imagine what they're going to do for you. That's going to be great.
I'm very excited to see what's going on. This is a case where I will accept special treatment. I've seen the knives already. I can't say anything nicer than I already would. So you know what? Sure. Be kind.
Man, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's
man, really Charlie, crazy. Is that that Spyderco Recenti, that's the one that you showed me at Blade at the show, right?
It's the good knife in the Spyderco.
The good one.
Yeah.
there's good one.
Yeah. No. There's one.
Dad and the Drunken were the only two that were like sort of higher level knife making there.
Nick, only because I'm a fucking complete snob, I wasn't going to go to the Spyderco table at Blade and Charlie said, like, come on over. And that Resenti one,
yeah,
it was, I mean, it felt great.
Yeah.
Oh, huge. My God, they nailed it. It
fixed all the problems of the Nirvana.
Yeah, I mean, it was enough that Charlie was excited enough to say, hey, you got to come over here and check this out. And really, if Charlie says that, you got to go check it out.
You do.
It was really nice.
How much would you pay for that knife if it was made by a random jackass? Like, if Peter Resenti made that, how much would you pay for that knife?
At least $45.
Yeah, if Peter Resenti made that knife, you'd pay $1,400 to $1,500 for it.
Right.
Yeah. It's phenomenal. It was.
And it'll be $600. It'll be great.
Yeah. And that's crazy. It surprised the heck out of me.
Yeah. And people are gonna complain about the price, but it's just like, look around. Really? Yeah. What can you do better? Show me. Shut up.
That is gonna be.
Wait, what is the price on that, Nick?
It's like $550,
$575, I think.
It'll be under $600. Under six.
It'll be over $45.
Over $45.
Because I feel like Spyderco is one of those barometer companies that you can kind of see where, like, the interest in the general knife community is going. If they're able to put out a knife at $600 and feel like it's going to do sufficiently well for them to warrant making it, then, you know, that probably has some implications about where the knife industry as a whole is. I think that's kind of interesting because it wasn't that long ago where we were freaking out about like a $350 Rubicon, right? You know, like Spyderco, what are you guys doing? But then now they've almost doubled that and it's actually possibly reasonable for them to do so. I thought that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I would like Benchmade to come out with a response, like a Benchmade Anthem -1, you know. Some kind of reply.
What would you? What would that -1 imply? What would be made out of?
Oh man,
what's your dream material?
I mean, as long as it's centered, that
you can't ask too much here, buddy. Yeah. Come on,
I don't want to nitpick or anything, but
well, I think maybe if they collaborate with a certain spindle knife producer, they will be able to take things to the next.
Oh, good Lord. Here we go.
God, you're just pushing this, aren't you?
Here we go.
Why are you stoking this fire, man?
I'm just trying to tickle you, Frank, you know, just a little bit.
Why you gotta be tickling? Why are you always tickling, Eugene?
I'm trying to bring some joy to you.
Yeah. Eugene the tickler over here.
That probably doesn't go well with Pastor Eugene, right?
Yeah, it goes hand in hand, man. Hand in hand.
I should hope not, but
Oh gosh.
One thing that did kind of bring me joy, but it's actually kind of it's more of a confession than it is like a positive thing. But I don't know if you guys caught this, but this morning Craig Brown announced that he's not going to be making any more servos after January of next year, right?
Good for him.
Yeah, that's, I think it's a great choice. Yeah.
Yeah. So you guys were talking about things that would bring me joy. I think that is something that to me is the mark of a very good maker who, you know, is proud of what they do. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, Mike always mentions Rogers, right? A big reason why I'm a huge fan of Rogers is like he doesn't just make his models that are super popular. He sort of makes what he wants. He branches out and just makes new models. Like he kind of does his own thing, and it's not really even about money. He rarely makes like full dress builds. You know, just the fact that you're not diluting your own market, your own fans, that you're just, you know, you're staying loyal to essentially your followers, right? The people who kind of collect your things, the people who would go after several models that in the same way that me and Mike would, we would just double dip even in the same model. Because we know you're not going to just dilute it, right? It's not just going to lose a bunch of value in the future. So that, you know, the makers who kind of continuously milk a single model just for the sake that they've got down the production and stuff like that is not as good, at least in the custom world, I think.
That can start to look a little grim-smo.
Yeah.
Oh, he said it. Whoa.
I didn't think he was going to say it.
Wow, man.
But look, we know this. I mean, this
all knew Charlie.
It's like, hey, Grimm's with Norseman number 1575 is coming off the production line. Right out of China. I mean,
Canada. I love their work, but guys, I mean, at a certain level, it's just like, holy crap. When are you going to stop? I feel like they're shooting themselves in the foot. And we're seeing the secondary prices starting to tank on them.
Yeah, they
like,
definitely
they're going
are.
At retail. And it's just like, ooh.
And people really are putting up their lottery wins, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they offer them all the time. And it really has to be a special Grimms mode to be above retail. Charlie, that was a super great point. And I, for the same reason, I was really happy when I saw that the Brown Knives post.
Super respectable. I think he's barely made 100 of them. And whoever's like gotten in on the V1s, the V2s, the drop point ones, like they're all going to, you know, you're doing a service to them in the same way they kind of invested in you. You're kind of investing in them. By discontinuing the piece, I think that's very respectful. As a custom knife maker,
then we can just begin the whole process of like dreaming about what they're going to make next, you know. And that's just fun in and of itself. I'm trying to imagine where they're going to go, because I think it would be amazing if Craig started making like a smaller knife, you know, like something in the 3-inch blade range, you know, like you were saying, Mike, maybe something like 2.75 to maybe 3.25.
I got beyond that.
Yeah,
I am a instant fan today, I think, just by hearing that.
Charlie, I totally agree. When I saw that post, it was and I've seen some killers by Craig Brown, but that post by him excited me more than any of the builds he's put up recently. I thought it was fantastic. It has. And there's some
it's smart.
Great ones.
It's very smart. Once you get to 100 of them, I mean, that's a lot.
Yes.
Yeah. And it gives you an opportunity to grow. Like, I'm sure that he has learned a great deal about the craft and about what he wants to see in his knife designs in the time of making 100 of these. That, you know, if he's just trying to modify his existing design may not work, but going from the ground up, whatever he does next, by definition, will be a better knife.
Exactly.
And he's free to move around the cabinet. He's free to do whatever the heck he thinks is a better choice. And that's wonderful.
Look at the quantum leap he took from his first knife to the servo, from the
parabolic
to the servo. Like, the parabolic was an integral, but it was kind of like definitely a different knife that was not as on the same level as the servo. It'll be exciting to see what he does.
Sure. It was like with Koenig too, right? I mean, you saw that between what they learned from the Aries and all the years of iteration on that. And then they bring all of that as just standard into the Mini Goblin, right? And so,
yeah,
it's definitely exciting to see. And, there's a lot of fun things to look forward to with that. I'm definitely looking forward to just in general the end of this year and the beginning of 2019 because, you know, it felt, I don't know about you guys, but it kind of felt like a long year, at least in terms of the production knife world, because there just weren't that many terribly exciting announcements or models. How did you feel that way, Nick? You're seeing so many of these as a reviewer, how did you feel about that?
Oh, absolutely. And I kind of did a video on this where I talked about how so many knives don't have a why right now.
Yes,
compelling things that makes
that's a great
them
video.
Like, thank you. It's inspired in many ways by other people. But anyways, you know, there were definitely exceptions. I don't want to crap on the whole market here, but there were so many people making such a big amount of buzz about the same damn thing as always. And so that was a little frustrating. And so, I think 2018 has, you know, there have been some great knives. I don't want to downplay that, but it's been a rough year at another level for production knives. Just so much of the same damn thing.
Yes.
People have dialed in, and it's just like Wee Knives has figured out how to make a frame lock, and so they're just going to make 1,000 of them. So I'm with you there 100%. I hope 2019 is more a question of like, okay, now how do we make this really interesting and different?
Right. And that's the thing. I feel like I've gotten to this place where, at least with the production knives, where I'm literally buying knives that I don't even like, but I'm buying them just because they're different, you know, just because they do something differently or they approach something in a different way. Like that Wee Knives double helix, you know, even though everything else they do is pretty cookie cutter. Not that that's necessarily bad, but, you know, that double helix, it was just weird and it didn't, you know, it worked. It wasn't a great EDC. There were some real significant problems with it, but I bought it, you know. I bought that knife just because it was different, you know.
Yeah.
So, I totally feel that. But maybe with that, we can kind of pivot, since we do have you as a guest, Nick, and since you are a knife reviewer par excellence, right? You know,
I disagree on the excellence part, but I'm certainly one par.
Okay, there you go. I think it might be worthwhile to talk about this, like thinking about the joy that we have in the knife hobby, but also thinking about how it is as a knife reviewer. Maybe that's something that we can kind of crack open and talk a little bit more about, especially like when you, I don't know, maybe lose some of that joy. How do you get it back? How do you reignite that? Or, you know, different things like that. I mean, of course, any of us can jump in, but do either you or Frank want to start on that?
Or you, Eugene.
Well,
yeah, Eugene, you're not a
YouTube reviewer.
Well, we're talking on a very different level.
Charlie, listen, I think, in my estimation, we're all reviewers because we're all taking part in this, you know, discussion. So,
sure, okay, yeah, there we go. Yeah, yeah.
And Charlie and I are working on a YouTube channel, so, you know, y'all can do your thing.
Really?
Yeah.
No.
Be like, okay, I'll
share it. I got excited. I was gonna. Where do I subscribe?
I'm like, finally, somebody else will do it. I could stop now. It'll be great.
I mean, I don't want to phrase this in like a roast kind of a way, but I've got several gripes about not just knife reviewers, but reviewers in general. It could be an Amazon review that I'm talking about for all I care. Sure. But it's hard, I think, to watch any kind of review or to read any kind of review and think that it's completely wholehearted and wholesome and not at least a little bit selling out. So it's very hard to find objectivity when everything is always so positive. Like, I understand how it gets to that point. Like, you wouldn't review something that you don't care about. Like you said, like, passion's a big part about it.
I wish that were true.
You know, I would like to see... I mean, it's hard to know what absolute truth is, but I don't know. Every time I open up a review, I watch a review, I read a review, it's a lot of superlatives. It's a lot of, this is great, this is excellent, this is perfect. I feel like, you know, at a certain point, not everything can be perfect. Not everything can have incredible action, insane fit and finish, attention to detail. You know, after a while, these words don't mean the same thing anymore, so to speak.
Sure.
You know, I actually had a maker once tell me, and I'll leave them unnamed, I think, but that the reason this person wanted to send me some knives was precisely because, you know, in my format, I tend to talk about the good, the great, the bad, and the ugly. And so as a result, I do talk about the negatives. And what this person said is that, A, I don't think there were that many negatives in these knives, but B, the fact that you talk about the negatives means people will believe the positives.
Oh, that's a great point.
It really was. It's like, yes, I agree. And I think when you have a reviewer, that is, who is just more or less showcasing, where it's just like, this is something I have here, take a look at it, it's beautiful, and isn't willing to ever talk about the negative side, at that point, you can't really trust the damn thing they're saying. Not because they don't, maybe it is just a wonderful knife, but you get the feeling like, I don't actually know if there's a major issue that they're telling me about, they're not telling me about, etc. I mean, I think there's that advantage to being at least willing to engage with the negative side. Maybe you shouldn't go as negative as I do. That's perhaps a thing. But at the same time, you need to be able to talk about that, because if you review something and completely neglect the fact that the pocket clip on the Brouwer is positioned terribly or something like that, it's like, what else? If somebody gets that in hand, they're just like, the next time they see your review, just like, well, no, I'm not listening to this jackass.
I think that balance that you're talking about is one of the reasons people like your review so much, and it's it's one of the reasons I can almost go to, you know, like, sometimes I'll fast forward to the negatives only because I know you're not going to be unfairly criticizing anything or have some I think for the most part, to me at least, the negative aspects you bring up are really well founded and generally acceptable to most people.
Thank you. I try. I don't always succeed, but I try.
But that brings up a question. I think I've just been dying to know. Okay, Nick. So I understand what you're saying about, like, the pocket pecking. Right? But what do you have in your pocket besides your knife that is
my cell phone and my wallet? Live in in my knife pocket.
You have maybe all three of those things in those pockets?
Yeah.
All right, I take back what I said a second
ago. That's a lot of stuff in the pocket.
I'm gonna retract all that.
Because I don't have my wallet in my back pocket, because that's stupid. And, you know, I could put my knife in with my keys, but then my keys are going to be attacking my knife. Maybe it's just because I'm an idiot. And I have a pair of pants with a deep coin pocket now that I can get away with most 3-inch folders in. And that's magnificent. I don't care as much about the Beckon anymore in that domain. But, you know, there are ways to do flipper tabs right where somebody can be an idiot like me and carry those things in the pocket with the knife and it doesn't matter.
Nick, I think you need to start courting fanny pack companies for review samples.
My wife would leave me so hard. Like, that is a hard limit for her.
I kid you not. My mom, okay, this is my mom, all right? So, you know, be gentle, right? But, like, my mom, when I was in college, she sent me a fanny pack.
Oh, that's magnificent.
But the fanny pack, you know, my mom is kind of a high-end shopper, so she sent me a Lacoste fanny pack.
That's amazing.
Yeah, a luxury brand, well, relatively, you know, fanny pack. And I got to say, I was somewhat conflicted about wearing it. I got to be honest, I felt tempted on many occasions to strap that thing on.
As a fashion blogger, maybe I should check that out. I don't know.
I'm telling you, man, secondary channel. Right. What were we talking about? We were talking about reviewer objectivity, right? Reviewer objectivity.
Yeah,
The ones that don't go. I like the ones that are more like conversations about, like Svee's channel. I think it's nice.
So, because I've got a quick thing about that one too.
A general conversation about something that's really nice. Because to be honest, just because I'm a fucking snob, like a lot of the stuff that I'm going to be, that's going to be coming my way or that I'm going to be getting, they're not going to be a lot of objective, you know, YouTube reviews of it. And I wouldn't expect there to be one. I'm not looking for a real objective, you know, well, you know, how good is the Mini Sabotage really? Like, it's just different. You expect different things.
Sure.
So, you know, it's just a little bit different for some of the things that I buy, at least. But with the production stuff, I have started watching more YouTube reviews for sort of objective, like some of the React stuff I've had lately, that Lambert collaboration or the Baby Machine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun to watch them.
Yeah.
I don't really use them as the, you know, whether or not I should buy it.
Can I jump in here?
Yeah.
I think it's completely stupid to listen to me for custom knives. Not only because I don't do them, but that's partly on purpose. Because custom knifing is not the world in which I need to exist. Like, the kind of reviewing I do, it's like, it's a fucking Thorburn. Of course it's fine.
Yep.
Like, I don't need to say this. And, you know, there are bad custom makers out there. You all know who I'm talking about already. But the thing is, by and large, that you're all laughing because you know.
Yeah.
That was a great decision.
Yeah, well, thank you. I mean, it made sense because every time I had one on my table when I was trying to, it was just like, I don't have that much to say about this.
That is a real problem, and I definitely have that problem with my videos.
Yeah, but you do it well, Doc. I like your approach because you bring it up, but you do custom knife reviewing properly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, thank God you're doing it, so I can just like, no, talk to Doc. That's him.
The thing about it is I have to skirt this line between a reviewer, and I always find it weird when people say I'm a reviewer. I never intended for that to happen. All I ever wanted to do was to tell my friends whether or not to buy these things is kind of how I felt about it.
Well,
and then
not a reviewer.
It is. I mean, it technically is. It really is. And then
I'm not a prostitute. I just have sex with people for money.
That's right. Well, I don't really do that. But then it got a little complicated because as you guys are aware, people reach out to you and they're like, hey, I have this knife. Would you like to do a review of it? And then you're like, okay, where do I go with the objectivity here? I like it, but and then it is important to stay objective, to say some negative things. I try to find things that annoy me or bother me about a particular knife. Those things are often very subjective and sometimes have no relevance to some people. Nick has smaller hands. I have bigger hands. Some knives are going to be more comfortable in my hands. Some are more in his. And those variations, I feel like the viewer has to have some sort of understanding that the reviewer is an individual with their individual life and opinions and hands and whatever opinions and mind. And then you have to look for the signs of objectivity or loss of objectivity. Are they selling it to you? Are they telling you where to buy it? Is it an ad? Including my videos. Some of my videos are much closer to advertisements than they are actual product reviews. I try to stay objective, but sometimes I'm just doing it because it's fun.
Objective is not a thing. I'm sorry. No way in hell to be an objective reviewer.
No.
Even I have pretended that I might be able to pull that off, but past a certain point, even just at the purely emotional level, it's really hard. Like if there's a maker who is just kind, we talked about the makers who are awesome people. Mm-hmm. It's really hard for me to take a look at something that a person I really like as a human made and say, you know what, this is really shitty.
Sure. Yeah.
And no, luckily they don't tend to go together, but you know, it's really, really tough. And I don't think objectivity also because of the own hands thing, you nailed it, Doc. You need to look at multiple reviewers. You need to understand that there are people out there for whom my reviews are stupid. Like, mm-hmm. You should not listen to me. A guy was commenting the other day, Nick, you should do more farm and ranch-centric reviews. And it's like, yes, probably. But, like, no, that's not – I am not your man. I'm happy to work – talk to some other jackass. But, no, we all have our own subjectivity, and you need to understand – you need to find reviewers whose work is interesting to you and who have similar tastes. That then you can get some value out of this. But if you just – if Nick Shabazz said it's a good knife, that tells you nothing.
Yeah, and, you know, I think on top of that, like, there is another layer you have to think about where as a viewer, as you're watching a review, you have to kind of be honest with yourself as to why you're watching the review. Like, am I watching this because I really want a breakdown of what this guy's experience of this knife was? Or do I want someone who's going to validate my purchase? Or do I just want some other way of enjoying the knife that I already have, right?
Yeah, and or I want just a high-resolution video
exactly,
of the knife?
Exactly, exactly, exactly.
Great
Maybe
point,
I want to be able to zoom in without having to bust out a loop or a magnifying glass. Maybe I just want something playing while I'm eating lunch, you know?
Yeah.
And so I do feel like there is a certain segment, right? As I sell these production knives at the store that I work at, most of the time people are asking me like functional questions. You know, they're asking me about how is this going to help me on the job site. You know, and in the end, you funnel them towards a knife that I would never want to review, but I have now reviewed a million times just through conversation. You know, because I tell them this is how it would work, this is how your hand is going to cramp or not cramp when you use it, blah blah blah. But that's a very different kind of thing than saying, okay, I'm never going to be able to buy this custom knife, but I want to see a video of it. I want to see someone tell me about it just because it's like an unboxing video. It triggers all the same pleasure centers of the brain. So I feel like we got to be honest about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's why I like some of the expose kind of, you know, channels mm-hmm. like Spies. Mm-hmm. Obviously, yeah, it's like world-class stuff, but I like it's more like an expose about this knife. You're not looking for recommendation to buy because, well, odds are you can't buy that fucking knife anyway.
Yeah.
And I enjoy those exposés, but I also enjoy Nick's, who's found that balance with, mm-hmm. you know, the positive and negative aspect of a knife that you can buy. And that's why, Nick, I thought I was bummed because I couldn't send you more knives, but I thought it was a great thing to move away from customs and, you know, establish that lane. Know where you mm-hmm. were and just do that. And it's very valuable. And especially now that I've gotten a couple production knives, I've watched your videos of them, Austin's videos of them.
Yeah.
And it's just a completely different thing than watching a expose of a knife that you probably won't get.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, I feel like Charlie, you had something that you wanted to say about that a moment ago. Right. And we just kind of started racing down the track, but there was something else you wanted to add, wasn't there?
No, I was just going to ask if when you sell your knives, do you promote yourself? Like, do you say, hey, I have a review of this knife. You can find me on Oh, on. Sure. That'd be easy. Your shop.
Yep. So, Epic. Sorry, go ahead.
I do.
I was just going to say that when I, the knives that I end up selling at our store and the knives I end up reviewing on my channel are just not really in the same, they just don't overlap. So it's not often the case that I do, but I will tell someone that I have a YouTube channel because I notice that when I mention that, they're much more likely to believe me when I say this knife will rust, you know, or that it won't rust, you know, something like that. So some of that stuff, I think I try to use it, sprinkle it in here and there just for the sake of letting this guy know I'm not just trying to take them for a ride. I'm not just overselling them on a knife. I'm bringing up this knife to the counter because I genuinely think that it's a good buy for them. So there's a little bit of that. But yeah, but I have a feeling that there was something else that you were thinking about, Charlie. You had mentioned something about Savvy or channels like that.
Yeah. So I think you guys have a good point when it comes to a lot of reviews aren't just for whether or not this is a good knife or not. Like in the same way, I think a lot of people probably watch cooking stuff, Gordon Ramsay stuff while they eat. It kind of makes the food taste better.
That's true.
You kind of just watch knife reviews while you're waiting for that particular knife that you've already purchased, mm-hmm. so to speak. But I do think Nick brings a good point when it comes to, you know, in the same way that maybe you feel not as qualified reviewing the higher end stuff. I do have an issue when it comes to certain reviewers and if you're kind of wearing your silk gloves and you have your microfiber cloth, I feel like you're not as qualified to talk about the knife in terms of its utility and practicality, right? Because it boils down to your target audience probably doesn't care, for one.
Yeah.
And two, you probably don't really know how it behaves in that scenario anyway, right?
Well, there I think is an important word right there, and that's target audience.
Yep.
This is an important thing for the viewers to understand too, that a lot of us are making these videos for a target audience, and sometimes if you're not in that target and you sort of wander into one of our reviews and mm-hmm. you disagree with it or you think that we're totally off base, because of those same reasons, say that you're a hard user, you dig holes all day with your knife.
Yep.
You're not going to want to watch one of my videos or one of Svi's videos where he's got his gloves on holding his Timascus knife. So, you know, I think that each of us has a target audience. That's why Nick has 50,000 people following him. Austin's got 30,000 or some 40. I don't even know how much he has now, and we have a couple. And so it's important for viewers to understand that as well, or readers.
And it's really hard to go outside of, and I don't even think of, at least on my side, I don't think of it as a target audience. I just have a set of opinions that I think resonate with some people and just don't with others. But like, I will review an Emerson or something like that. That's, to me, that is like the least Nick Shabazz knife possible. This is a man who has gone on the record saying his knives are meant for fighting and that fit and finish doesn't matter. Like, we don't see eye to eye.
Yeah.
And when an Emerson fanboy wanders into my life, into my comment thread, it's always hilarious because they're just like, you idiot. And I'm like, you don't even know how to win a knife fight. And I'm like, yes, I agree. Thank you.
You know, that's interesting, Nick, because recently someone commented on my channel saying, and I hope this isn't, you know, I'm sure you've gotten used to this kind of thing already, but someone was telling me, like, you're sounding like Nick and Nick is not a knife guy. And I'm just thinking, what on earth are you talking about that he's not a knife guy? And what I realized was that, you know, Nick is not the kind of knife guy that guy happens to be.
Yeah.
Right. And,
yes.
And I think just not being able to see outside of your own box or see outside of your own filters is what limits you from being able to understand what someone else is actually trying to do. You know, that's probably a life lesson. I could probably start preaching on that at some point, but that's literally, I think, what happens a lot of times. We just kind of think a knife guy is the kind of guy who, yeah, either gets in fights or only collects these kinds of knives or only uses a fixed blade or whatever it might be. But, you know, we're all experiencing the knife hobby from different angles and perspectives. And, you know, we're only speaking from our perspective. And if it doesn't make sense to you, then that's fine. You know, that's totally fine. There's nothing wrong with that.
And this gets to the difference between a review and a recommendation. Like, I find myself, if somebody walks up to me and says, you know, okay, I am a farmhand in Montana. I am constantly on a ranch. What knife should I get? I am not going to recommend them the same knives that I love. Like, very often, it's like Cold Steel Ultimate Hunter. Like, it's an incredible freaking knife for that kind. Would I want to carry one? No, never. But that's the right knife for that person. When I do a review, I'm just talking about my views of that, but that's a different – and sometimes I'll explicitly say, you know, this is not a good knife for me, but it is a very good knife, like the Benchmade Triage. Like, this isn't the knife I would ever carry. It's not designed for me, but at the same time, I can acknowledge it to be excellent. And I think if you lose that perspective – and I have lost that perspective. I look at the world through my own eyes. Obviously, you all do too, not through mine, that is. But still, if you lose that perspective and you're just like, no, something that is not a good knife to me is just a terrible knife, that's where it gets dangerous. That's where it gets hard, and it's real hard to stop yourself from going there.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. Like, at our store, we sell these knives that are $5.98. Like, I want
to see one of these.
Yes, I have unwrapped chewing gum with stronger foil than the steel on these knives, you know, guys.
Help me out here.
Like, it's pretty crazy. Like, but I mean, they make your Z Hunter look like a freaking custom premium. You know, like, wow, they use plastic for this knife? Are you serious? You know, like, it's another level.
I would buy one.
our customers, though, I mean, they just need a knife that they can, they just need something that they can use to pry open paint cans all day. And then if it gets dropped into a still liquid vat of concrete, they're not going to cry about it, you know? So they buy these by the dozen, and it totally makes sense, you know? But if someone's coming in looking for a collector piece, I mean, first of all, why are you doing it at that store? But also, I mean, it's just a totally different set of values, perspectives, expectations.
Can you please ship one to Nick with a set of gloves?
Oh, my goodness. I don't know if I can afford the insurance on that, guys.
I will PayPal you the relevant information. Well, I'll arrange for a courier to come pick it up with the briefcase with the handcuff. Yeah, we'll work this out.
There you go. Yeah. We sell them out of a bucket. So maybe I could just ship the whole bucket to you at some point.
Honestly, this is the thing I'm least comfortable with that I do on my channel on a regular basis is the Terrible Knives Live thing, where I'll take Z Hunters or M-Techs, that kind of thing, and just tear them apart. At some level, they've earned it. It's just they make knives that are just really not that good. But at another level, I feel terrible because – and I had this experience. I went into like a mall knife store, which in all of its glory. and I'm talking to the clerk there, and this person clearly didn't know me from Adam or anything like that. And I'm looking at these knives and I'm thinking, oh, God, that's hilarious. And I'm like – I'm catching myself laughing. And this kid's like, isn't this the coolest knife you've ever seen? Mm. And it's just like –
yeah.
Oh, God, that doesn't feel great, because I hate to be like bullying not only the makers of these things, but also the people who love them. If you love Z Hunters, truly, if that is your passion, then I hate to be the guy to tell you that your passion is terrible. But at the same time.
Wait a second.
It's true, though. It's a true story, though. But you're here to enlighten those people, right?
But I don't want that. At some level, they are the sane ones. A person who handles a $14 knife and says this is as high as it gets is the smart one. It's the same person who wears an $8 watch for their entire life.
It's true.
Just like they are the smart ones here. And so why should I be crapping on their dreams?
Yep. That is true. That is totally true, man. We are the ones that justify our own spending. Truly.
Exactly. Oh, I wish I never got this fucked.
It's so deep, man. It's so deep.
I wish I never fucking discovered this. I wish I never met Charlie. I wish he was never like, hey, you should check out this guy named Thorburn, and this guy, this Russian guy.
Well, I'll tell you, some combination of Jim Skelton and Nick Chavez certainly fanned the flames for me.
You know what? That's exactly what it was, Frank. I got right in that suite right when I met Charlie. Nick was starting to come up.
Nick was coming up. Skeleton was in his stride. Yeah. It was,
yep.
CD yeah, was still posting. Right there. And there was a. Did you guys follow Mindless Mark?
Yeah.
Oh, man. That's a great Instagram guy.
Yeah, he totally fell off. Knives, to be honest.
You told me about him, too. That was a dangerous combination.
Yeah.
Nick, Jim Skelton, and Charlie.
But in the middle of all of
that's
that,
a problem.
Like, every now and then, I'll just, you know, because he doesn't do this hardly anymore, but I'll still go back and watch a Nut and Fancy video.
Yeah.
And yeah. Those are the first reviews I watched. And I love that they just kind of put me back in my place a little bit. Because he's got a very specific set of needs and very specific set of expectations. Yes, speed, lightweight.
Jimping.
You know, jimping. And that works for him. That's what he's looking into. But I think just the experience of watching that kind of review reminds me that there is a wholly different paradigm out there that's still as valid as mine. You know?
That guy loves to have a zip tie on his Spider Coast audio. It's that kind of a crowd. Know your target audience.
Man. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And it's funny. It seems to me, I don't know if it's just because I got into knives in this time period, but it seems that there was some kind of shift in this time period, especially when you listen to other podcasts or YouTube reviewers. Like, maybe this is like a great time to get into knives in the last like 2.5 years or a tough time to get into the like knives. It's maybe there was some kind of shift there. Maybe there was something and you know, I happened to get into it at the same time. So I'm a total noob at this shit, but all of a sudden you end up like a noob with like huge expectations.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing. I don't have a great sense of history. You try to learn as much as you can, but.
And weird expectations. That's the thing. Yes. Like, one of the things I hate about the fact that I exist is that. Well, okay. I mean, it's struggle, aside from the obvious, but no, super reviewers at some level should never be a thing. Like, there shouldn't be reviewers that are as big as some of these, as like Nut and Fancy, maybe even me. I don't know. I don't want to sound like I'm so fancy, but still, because you overfit. Like, I am regularly worried that there is somebody in the knife market who is getting their start today and thinking, oh, God, if Nick Shabazz wouldn't like this knife, it can't be a good knife.
Or something.
And not
there
like,
are a lot of those people.
Yeah, and it's like, no, I'm just one asshole. Like, seriously, you do not want to overfit to me. I am so weird. And yet people look at me as like some kind of authority. And it's like, no, don't watch this channel.
It's interesting. I feel like the one thing that should be said is that it's not entirely just the celebritization of certain reviewers that's at fault. I think that Epic Snuggle Bunny put it really well when I think some video I watched like a couple years ago, he was saying, he just made this offhanded remark and just said, yeah, we're in the Baroque period of knives where, you know, we have knives that, like you said in your video, like that don't need a why to exist.
Yeah.
So already, even before they discovered Nick Shabazz, you know, or Dr. Funky, you know, or Epic, you know, like they're already coming in with a different mindset and different worldview. So it is just a very different time, I think. And it doesn't quite make sense in some ways, but I guess that's just the joy of the rise and fall of these things.
But that's the thing that brings me so much joy right now, coming full circle there, is right now, I mean, think of Koenig knives, think of the Holtz, think of the Grimsmos, think of the hell of the Thorburns of the world.
The Holtz.
There are people out there who are able to do this work, this machining in pocket knives that is so amazing, that is like better than anything human history has provided in terms of knife making. And they're able to do it out of their damn garage.
They
are able, any jackass who has the skill, the effort, the stick-to-itiveness for whatever it's called, persistence is the technical term, that is able to do this can make something that's absolutely amazing. And that makes this one of the most exciting times in the knife world, I think, ever imaginable. The fact that you can get something so amazing from people who weren't making knives 2 years ago is just cool.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I
100% agree.
And that's the nicest thing that I think, you know, a channel, once you get to be a quote unquote celebrity, the nicest thing that can happen is you find somebody who's doing incredible work and you give them that platform. You show the world, and that's great.
Speaking of, one more thing that's on my horizon for things that will bring me joy is the Skaha 2. My name is finally coming up in next month, so thank you, Nick. But I'm going to be getting it with the carbon fiber option. Looking forward to that.
So
that the Skaha, by the way, is the only knife I ever sent to Nick that he bought from me.
Wow.
And as soon as he had it for a couple days, and he emailed me back and said, I want to buy this. And right then I knew that was his special knife.
Well,
I don't know if you remember
only,
that, Nick, but you bought mine. That was
no, I know that. I was about to bring that up. And more so, it wasn't even that I had it for a couple of days trying to make the decision. It's like I had it in an envelope for a couple of days. And then I took it out. I flipped it like four times. It's just like, holy shit.
Yeah.
You're selling me this knife.
Yeah.
Wow. How much was it back then? 120?
That's awesome. Well, so technically, it's really Mike.
Did it cost back then?
I don't even.
Charlie, did you ask something? What it cost back then?
Yeah.
Man, Nick, what would I think it was? One.
I paid you $100, I think, but
or 160.
Yeah.
No.
It was like 150, I think. Maybe
I think it was 155 or 165.
Either way, it's still a stupid good value.
It was a crazy value, and Nick, I knew it was something special because I had sent him a lot of knives, and that was the only one he said, "Wow, I'm buying this." That was it.
Yeah, you were the one who convinced
really
me to get
you.
One. Like, check it out. Yeah.
Yeah, it's Mike who's really the ultimate source of all of their manufacturing woes at this point.
He's the one they should have the voodoo doll of, not me. Yeah.
Mike, you jerk. Come on, man.
Yeah, how dare you? You ass.
Those $20 price hikes are all, that's my fault.
It goes for like $250 right now, I think.
On the secondary, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Does it?
Yeah, it's pretty absurd.
It's still a good knife at $250 compared to a lot of stuff out there, but yeah.
I think so. And the fact that now the wait list is over a year at this point, I can understand why people are paying so much for it. So.
A year for that?
Yes, yeah. They actually updated their site. If you sign up for it, like as of about 2 weeks ago, if you sign up for it, it's telling you that their estimated wait time is about a year.
If they can get the Grimmsnells to make it, it'll be done in a month.
There you go. Yeah. They should just team up. They're all in Canada. Canada's a tiny country, right?
Oh, absolutely.
They're probably neighbors, you know? They play poutine together.
I mean, so. if you put a Norsen blade and a Ras blade together, you do actually get a Skaha blade. So.
There you go. It's perfect. Yeah.
All right.
that's the joy of review, I think, is if you can find those things and connect somebody to something they love at a good price for them. That's why I do it.
And
you know, if they can find somebody that they like as a reviewer, whether that's me or some other random jackass, that's wonderful. Otherwise, we're just making a lot of noise, at least in my opinion.
Inevitably, if you have like a super positive review, that's not good for people that actually want that knife, especially if it's like a small volume knife, right?
Yeah, there's an effect there, the hug of death.
So in other words, you got to tell all your friends first before you publish the video.
That's why you sign up to be a Patreon patron. You get the previews.
Oh, there we go. All right, there was the plug.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm just saying.
Okay.
Wait,
well,
what do you mean? Are you all not all Patreons of Nick Shabazz?
Oh, no. I'm not on
Patreon. Nick, I apologize for the rest of these assholes.
Sorry, bro. I don't have a Patreon. I don't Patreon, Nick. I'm sorry, dude.
Yeah. Frank, start that Patreon.
Patronizing.
Okay.
On that note.
Yeah.
All right. Frank's Patreon is.
No, does not exist.
Send the money to JG. JG.
That would be great.
Send your money directly to. Yeah.
Actually, I'm pretty sure if you just send it to South Africa, it will just. Just as a country, right?
Exactly.
Hey.
Put it in their GDP.
Nice.
All right, guys. Well, this was just such a blast talking with you, Nick. Thank you so much for bringing joy to our podcast. And just giving a chance to talk about things that we are looking forward to and have been enjoying. Yeah, so just once again, Nick Shabazz, you guys know where to find him on YouTube as well as on Instagram and on Patreon, right? We should make sure we say that.
I'm an asshole for that plug.
I'm Eugene Kwan. Again, you can find me on Instagram and YouTube.
I'm Dr. Frunky on Instagram and YouTube as well.
This is Mike. I'm Bloomin' Blade. On Instagram.
I don't know why you're doing that. That is so weird for me, man.
Wow.
I'm Charlie.
Yeah.
That's strange.
Thanks, Nick. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much. All right. Thank you to all of our listeners. Make sure you join us the next time we gather around to talk about our knife lives. And until then, have a nice knife life.